Do you like the Star Wars? Welcome to the Rantcore Pit. It's me, Cole Jedi Cole Houston, along with
Eddie Medina.
And needless to say, we like the Star Wars.
Oh, definitely.
And that's rather why we pose that question every week, even though we know you like the Star Wars too.
Exactly.
It's like that James Earl Jones episode of Big Bang Theory. I like Star Wars too.
That was like Louis Armstrong.
Yeah, that was one of the worst.
Channeling James Earl Jones. I shouldn't say anything. It's better than what I could do.
Still, yeah, that was probably the worst.
That was less James Earl Jones and more Ozzie Davis or something.
Yeah, it's. For those of you who wondered what Ozzie Davis would be like playing James Earl Jones, that's why they haven't done that.
Yeah, exactly.
Right there. So yes, indeed, we like us some Star Wars. That's why we do this show. That's why we can't shut up about Star Wars whenever anyone's listening, or even when they're not. So we've got thinking about the fact that, you know, we've done a lot of Star Wars stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been a long time, so we just kind of sat and talked about Star Wars on a really personal level, and that was the topic.
Yeah.
Not just the things that came up during the course of our normal discussions.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, what better way to pass the time than just two lifelong Star Wars fans just taking an hour to talk organically about Star Wars and why we love it?
Yes, you know, especially two Star Wars fans who didn't know about each other's presence, often in the very same place at
very
the same
often.
Time.
Whether it was Redbird Mall or a line to get Anthony Daniels' autograph.
Yeah, we're just sort of constantly not crossing paths in the name of Star Wars.
Uh-huh, exactly.
So, you know, it's little wonder eventually fate would conspire.
Mm-hmm.
And bring us this show. So I thought what we would do is just kind of go through movie to movie, kind of start at the beginning.
Sure.
Since my entree into Star Wars is somewhat legendary. And it's been a while since we really talked about these sorts of things, so ideally a lot of you have forgotten. And likely as not, we'll probably bring up things we didn't in previous incarnations of talking about our very first Star Wars experiences.
Mm-hmm. And if we actually touch on stories we've touched on in episodes 1, 2, or 3 early on, then you'll have to forgive us, because after you've done enough podcasts,
This is our 31st episode of this show, by the way.
Yeah,
so,
you kind of forget what you've recorded and what you've talked about just
one-on-one.
And
you forget what you've talked about where. When you've done as many damn podcasts as I have, both my own and those of others, and, you know, since I cut my teeth on a Star Wars podcast, mm-hmm. Tell us a story, Grandpa Cole. Then, you know, where and when I've told these tales all blurs into this huge mass of Star Wars talking.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go ahead and let Eddie lead us in with, because, you know, I'm in pretty much every podcast I've ever been a part of, the one person who can lead in with stories of, I was there.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was there. And let me tell you about it.
But again, I
can't remember. I know I didn't catch Star Wars.
You weren't just sort of like embryonic at the time, but at the same time, you weren't like taken to many movies either.
No, and I've said in previous shows, Star Wars was actually the first movie I got to see as a, quote, big boy, you know, in the movie theaters. Like, prior to that, all my movie watching had been obviously on TV or, you know, at school when they would bring us into the lunchroom and show us, like, you know, Escape to Witch Mountain or something like that.
Was that mandatory in Texas at one point?
I think so.
Every school had to show Escape to Witch Mountain.
They were trying to indoctrinate us into the witchcraft or whatever.
I guess so. I had no idea that really it was witchcraft.
Exactly.
So it had sort of a Wiccan background to it.
There you go.
So this is tonight's episode from Wiccan to Wicket.
Oh, I like that. Wiccan to Wicket. Wow, that is actually that
strangely
actually,
works. Yeah.
It chronicles my journey from Lidehill Elementary in Oak Cliff all the way to Redbird Mall in Oak Cliff.
You just can't get this guy out of Oak Cliff.
I know, exactly. But no, I can't. I know I didn't see Star Wars in that initial first run in May, but I know I caught it later, probably when it got, you know, the word started to spread that this was the movie you had to see. And I imagine I saw it sometime later in the summer once, you know, the lines sort of kind of died down. But I do remember seeing New Hope. I remember that was such an exciting thing, not only to be able to go to the movie theaters finally and see something, you know, like that, but to see Star Wars, of all things, as your movie introduction.
Exactly.
To the experience was a big deal. But even if it had been my first movie experience or my 20th movie experience, the fact remains that Star Wars itself as a movie would have blown me away in either scenario, because just seeing all of it, you know, unravel before you, you were just amazed how, you know, from the opening shot of the what's it called? I'm drawing a blank now.
Phantom IV, the Rebel Blockade Runner.
Yeah.
We knew it back then.
Exactly. You know, blasting by, and then, you know, the Imperials, you know, hot on their trail. But just beyond that, you know, once you got into the characters of C-3PO and R2-D2 and the mystery behind this Princess Leia person, who was she and why is she so important? You know, of course, you had the imposing image of Vader and the Stormtroopers just mowing down these rebels, and it's just like you were just hit with all this excitement early on, and it just took you into this 2-hour-long adventure that, just quite frankly, there in my opinion has never been topped. You know, the experience from frame one to the last frame,
absolutely,
it's just amazing. And so, after seeing it in the theater, you know, I just went crazy over it. You know, my brother Vic and I just, you know, we had to have the action figures, you know, and back then our toy box consisted of Fisher-Price people. And and for those who are too young to remember Fisher-Price people, it literally is just like a little tube with a head on top, no arms. Almost like before there was VeggieTales, there were the Fisher-Price people. No arms, no legs, just a head and body.
Yeah,
and
I hadn't thought about it that way, but they were kind of veggies.
Vegistic. Exactly. But, you know, and
yeah, the
so,
Fisher-Price people, depending on your era, if you go back far enough, were wooden bodies with wooden heads and plastic.
That's right.
And then later on, you know, somebody realized that that was terribly Amish of them. So they went with something known as plastics from the.
Maybe they were created by the Amish, because they are very Amish. I have never
I think maybe what had happened was it was someone at Fisher-Price saw the movie The Graduate.
Mm-hmm.
Came back to the office and said, "Gentlemen, you know, while somebody's there whittling the next little person." One word, plastics. And the rest was history, but.
So we have the graduate to thank for bringing
throwing a bunch of wood lathe turners Fisher-Price out onto the streets.
Exactly. So we went from toys being made out of tin to wood to plastic.
That's right.
So yeah, so our toy chest had stuff like Fisher-Price things, you know, stuffed animals or what have you. So to get the action figures of Star Wars, and I know people snicker at how they are sculpted now, but back then, that was the best you could have. And I was born after the whole 12-inch G.I. Joe era. I imagine the 12-inch G.I. Joes, if you were a kid around that time, was just amazing.
Oh,
but,
yes.
They
were amazing, I assure you.
You know, I take that back. You know, Migos were in the toy chest, so that is
that's about the era where pretty much everybody had at least one Mego figure.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, naturally I had an Aquaman, and I really wanted the Lizard because it had this stupid cloth tail.
Yes!
Kind of a scaly motif.
Wow, that's right.
The fact that it was like something... It was almost like my young brain, there was value added with the Lizard, because everybody had, you know, the standard Mego body,
uh-huh,
or the standard corpulent Mego body if you were the Penguin. Everybody had a jumpsuit.
Yeah.
It was either your body, if you were the Thing, or...
Which was really weird, but yeah.
Or your clothing.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you know, you had either... Most of them had the same kind of hands. They were just whatever color your skin was. And then everybody
that,
had, like...
They had people hands.
Yeah, they had people hands. That's right. And then they all had a head of, you know, whatever their character was. Some, like Conan, had hair, had, like, doll hair.
There was a Conan Mego?
There was a Conan Mego.
Oh, wow, I didn't know that.
And Thor had the same, the girlish bouffant.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I hated that girl hair.
I think that's what gave me a distaste for Thor so early on, because I was never a fan of the Thor character, and I think it all stems from that Mego.
But, you know, with Lizard, you got a torn-up lab coat, you got pants, you got a tail. You got, like, some extras there for your money.
Yeah.
Same price point. But, yeah, that was a period where, you know, really the idea of the action figure below a certain scale. The Migos were about an 8-inch figure.
Mm-hmm.
G.I. Joes were 12-inch.
Mm-hmm.
And that was your... And, the you know, that literally spawned out of...
And your Fisher-Price was 2-inch.
Yeah. 2 inches of hand-turned wood. Hickory or birch, depending on the Amish region where they were tooled. That was a period where there was still, you know, Scribners were still, mm-hmm. before the Xerox became of its own. You still had a lot of monks employed by publishers.
Gosh.
But in all seriousness, that was a kind of a unique, so many things happened.
Yeah.
Surrounding Star Wars in so many ways, it changed the world for us. I remember, you know, that summer, the first movie I ever saw more than once, and it wasn't Star Wars, but oddly enough, it allowed, I guess, setting a precedent, like, well, he went and saw that god-awful stink bomb twice.
Twice, yeah.
I guess we can let him see this other movie 17 times, or whatever it was. Was The Day of the Animals.
Oh, I love that movie.
And I actually saw that in the theater twice because it was amazing and I had to go back.
It is amazing. I love that movie.
I mean, any movie where a guy's, you know, being faced down by a puma or something and he's backing into his car and then you get a shot, you get coverage of this car seat loaded with rattlesnakes.
Yes! I was about to bring that up. That when I saw that movie the first time around, I was so into it. But when it got to the part where the guy backed up into the rattlers and they showed that one latching onto his arm or hand, I got so scared. I was a little kid. I got so scared I shut it off and ran into my room because that freaked me out.
Oh, yeah. It's a freakish movie. If you get a chance,
oh my God.
Watch this thing because it's awful by today's standards, but it's fun and it's stupid and
oh my god!
It's like, you know, all the animals in the world go nuts and then they don't.
Yeah.
It's over. I'm like, okay, well.
It took a lot for me to actually sit down and wait. Of course, I had to wait for Channel 27 or 11, whoever it was, rerun it a second time.
Yeah, so that was a hard period, and that's one of the things we're going to talk about in this this particular show is.
Uh-huh.
A number of things that happened, you know, back in our day.
Yeah.
That weren't the case, you know, that aren't the case today. You know, you kids got it so easy. Yeah, you know, if you want to see a movie twice, it'll be out on DVD, and you can see it 100 times.
Yeah.
But, you know, prior to that, my film fare was the occasional translated Godzilla movie, anything Jason the Argonauts, or, you know, any Ray Harryhausen.
Yeah,
Sinbad.
Sinbad.
Yeah, all the Sinbad movies.
The Gulliver's Travels.
You'd go see the Samuel Z. Arkoff productions with the giant Gila monsters and alligators monitor lizards with prosthetic sail fins doubling as dinosaurs because they were too cheap to do animated ones. Those were the films that I was growing up with going to see in the theater.
And Planet of the Apes. You can't forget
that. Oh, yeah. That awful Planet of the Apes. And then along comes this Star Wars. And it was ironic to me because I did check. And they both, Day of the Animals came out in May of 77.
Uh-huh.
Star Wars
really?
Came out a week or two later.
Really?
But you have to understand that probably in this part of Texas, Day of the Animals was showing in more theaters.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Than Star Wars. I am certain. And it was well into the summer, like July, before I saw Star Wars. It had been out a while.
Uh-huh.
In fact, by May, you're still on the tail end. You're like on the ass end of the school year.
Uh-huh.
In early May. And, or even in late May, depending on how the year panned out.
Uh-huh.
And so we're like getting in the ass end of the school year, first part of the summer.
Uh-huh.
And I've probably told this story a million times about how my older brother, a friend of his, had seen this movie, Star Wars. I think, you know, we're looking at the newspaper, and I was like, well, here's this Star Wars. That, you know, that sounds like something you kids would go see. You went and saw that stink bomb Day of the Animals twice. what? But, you know, it's all we knew about it was a friend of Clay's had gone to see it and said there was never a dull moment.
Yeah.
And that was interesting. And I saw the commercial. Maybe I'll see if I can scare it up for this to link it. But the very first Star Wars commercial was so ridiculously, you know, you saw, like, I talked about going to see the trailer for Empire Strikes Back, and seeing that at a movie, going to see another movie solely to see the Return of the Jedi trailer.
Yeah.
The Star Wars original commercial that aired on television was just pathetic.
Yes.
Insofar as how it sold the concept. And I remember seeing, oh, that's that movie I remember seeing the commercial for with a boy, a girl, heroes and villains.
Mm-hmm.
A boy and a girl.
Mm-hmm. A brother and a sister.
What is this, Hansel and Gretel? Well, it turned out practically so. But
exactly.
They just didn't know better.
Uh-huh.
It's like if Hansel and Gretel thought they were just friends. They went to the same school. Turned out they had the same mom and dad.
It was a very odd commercial, because I could be wrong, because I have seen it in more recent years, and I think it might be on the Blu-ray set somewhere. But I remember seeing it thinking,
that is
what sold it?
Yes.
That's what sold it to everyone.
This was how Fox was marketing that
uh-huh.
movie. But if you look at older trailers, it's fun sometimes to see some old movie trailers and old movie commercials.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, boy, we were bored back then.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't have to try.
Mm-hmm.
You said, you know, Barbara Streisand's in a new movie, and here's a scene. Hi, I'm Barbara Streisand in a new movie, you know. And that was it. The very first Poltergeist trailer, interestingly enough, to kind of, again, derail the conversation a bit.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have to look that up when they say so. I've never actively sought it out. But there was actually a theatrical trailer for Poltergeist, and I swear to God, I thought that this movie Poltergeist was going to be like this. Was it Search for Noah's Ark?
Oh, like the...
Or the Lincoln
yeah.
Conspiracy, or one of those,
uh-huh.
a documentary.
Yeah,
because it was just shots of Steven Spielberg talking about what a poltergeist is, and then, like, talking to paranormal experts back before those stupid ghost hunter guys
mm-hmm.
were popularized by about 40 years.
Yeah.
And it was like, wow, that... not interested?
Yeah, it was more of like a behind-the-scenes thing than it was an actual trailer.
Yeah, and I guess they wanted to get... I think the logic must have been, we need to get the word poltergeist, which like 7 people in the entire U.S. knew
yes.
at that time. And now you can say, oh, yeah, poltergeist. Well, yeah, I've been following poltergeist for years. And, no, you haven't. Shut up. We didn't know what that was back then.
It was almost like when you have to explain the joke, and the joke is no longer funny because you had to sit there and explain it to someone.
Exactly.
But they were trying to explain what a poltergeist is and why you should be scared of it.
Exactly. And then you find out later the reason you should be scared of it is it turns your puppets into deadly clowns and your tree tries to eat you.
Yeah.
And the TV swallows your sister. But it was a different time, and that's one of the things that's interesting in discussing our arrival into Star Wars is you have to understand how vastly different this was compared mm-hmm. to everything.
Yeah.
You know, if you're accustomed to a couple of guys in rubber suits duking it out and all the people having missynced dialogue,
mm-hmm.
you go see this thing. And it's so well fleshed out. And, you know, I think I'd have to look, because I think Inframan was the... I actually saw that in the theaters in the 70s. Yeah, 1975, so a couple of years earlier. We're going to see this kaiju H.R. Puffin stuff meets Ultraman.
Yeah.
And that blew me away.
Yeah, yeah.
Even though the characters were decidedly cookie cutter, the plot was ridiculous, the monsters were often... you know, make add a level of sophistication to Power Rangers years later.
Mm-hmm.
Added a level of sophistication to Sigmund and the Sea Monsters that at that period in time.
Yeah.
But this was what we went to go see, and then we're given some, you know, as Alec Guinness put it, some fairy tale rubbish.
That's right. That's right.
But operated on so many levels, and it did things no one had ever done before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the closest to being just really impressed by something, you know, you'd occasionally get to go see a James Bond movie.
Mm-hmm.
And this was like a James Bond movie met every other ridiculous Inframan and Day of the Animals and Journey to the Center of the Earth and Sinbad you'd ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then some, and it was just, you know, you'd never encountered anything like that. So it's little wonder it became a phenomenal success.
Well, and I've said it before on a past show, and obviously Star Wars was 77. Well, 76 between, but just right before, the year before, we got Logan's Run. Now, I love Logan's Run.
Yes.
Colleen.
Run, runner.
Yeah, Colleen loves Logan's Run, so I can't say too much bad about it because I like it too. But you see the difference 1 year before in Logan's Run and a year later in Star Wars, and it's just like you would think there was 10 years between the two movies. And it's like you trade up from Roscoe Lee Brown to James Earl Jones and Jenny Gutter for Carrie Fisher. But
in Jenny Gutter's defense, she did go full nude.
That's true.
Which is odd, because seeing it years later, I'm like, how did I miss that? Probably because I saw it on TV. That's how I missed that.
Yeah, I was going to say, the same thing when I bought the DVD. I was like, I don't remember seeing Nips the first time around.
Yeah. I do remember fish and plankton and sea greens and protein from the sea.
Yes. No one can forget that. I think that probably says that on Roscoe Lee Brown's headstone.
That's right.
If he's dead.
Wow. Well, maybe he had it, you know, preemptively sculpted. You know.
Okay. He died in 2007. So.
Could have had it carved early. It's cheaper that way.
Yeah.
Granite just gets more and more expensive every year.
He put it on layaway.
That's right. And then later they laid him away. So.
Speaking of which, this is Star Wars related. Did you ever put your Star Wars stuff on layaway? Like a Kmart?
Oh, wow. I did put stuff on layaway, but I can't honestly say whether it was Star Wars stuff or other things. But
I think we
But yes, I do remember the days of layaway.
I think we snuck in like our land speeders and something else, something that's just more than your normal $2 or $3 for a figure on the layaway. That way we could, you know, have something to look forward to.
But I do remember seeing the, you know, like the early bird sets in the stores in their original display carton. And it was just, you know, basically a slanted cardboard display thing that had 20 or 30 or however many of those big envelopes full of the package of stuff that was going to promise to give you. And, you know, even the packaging speaks of its era.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Because you look at the thing. I've actually got an original one hanging on the wall.
You always like to rub that in. You have to throw that in whenever you get the chance.
That's right. And I'm looking at it now, and I'm thinking, wow, this... But it was Star Wars, and it was so new. And, you know, as we talked about, I think, in the collectibles in the past, that, you know, the only thing you had in the stores was the plates set, the little paint-by-number thing. You had some puzzles.
I think we discovered there was like a Valentine book or something that came early on.
Yeah, and
some, yeah, there wasn't
maybe
a whole
some
lot.
Iron-ons, you know, things that were quick and easy to produce.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then you had the novelization, which I bought but didn't read, and but I had it. So, you
mm-hmm.
know.
I think that's why the Star Wars figures comics were such a big deal to me, because that was something that interested me. You know, like something that was Star Wars that I could hold and read through and obsess about because I didn't have the figures yet.
Yeah.
And
yeah, comics were a great entree while you were waiting for something more tangible.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. You were talking about the early bird special. The early bird special. Like, I got my blue hair.
Apparently. How would you like your eggs?
Yeah. The early bird package, how it was designed. And it was just, you didn't even have pictures of the figures because they hadn't actually been produced yet. So you just had the concept art.
Yeah, basically you had that watercolor looking artwork.
Uh-huh.
That also served as the backdrop for the little cardboard display that came with it.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, it was just, when you had that display and you're just staring at it for a month and a half or 2 months,
mm-hmm.
and just envisioning what's going to stand on those little pegs. And then along comes, you know, a gap period. You're kind of, news is getting out.
Yeah.
That it's going to be 3 years between movies, or you know, a couple more years before you see that they're working on a
yeah.
sequel.
Yeah,
and that's coming. So there's anticipation. What's next for these characters? They already blowed up the Death Star.
Mm-hmm.
That's enough for most people.
Yeah,
but you know, for us, we're hungry for more. Some, I mean, we're excited about this because you were put into this world that was so well fleshed out. You had these, you know, one of the memories I have is of, like, what an amazing idea was the TIE Fighter.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't look like anything. You know, the X-Wing at least kind of invokes an aircraft in many respects, but the, you know, the idea of the TIE Fighter, the most patently impossible looking vehicles.
Yeah.
And, you know, it would be many, many years later before I had the sophistication to reason out what's brilliant about that design is, in space you can fly any shape. It doesn't matter what it's shaped like. You don't have to worry about aerodynamics
yeah.
and such. And that's what was really brilliant about the design. There were so many aspects that were so brilliant and left you wanting to see something more, because
oh sure,
you know, you had these armies of stormtroopers and you had Darth Vader with this, and everything's all plastic on one side of the fence, everything's all robes and tunics on the other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I don't know, it seemed like, for something that was effectively a low-budget picture in its day, they spent wisely and created this phenomenon. So then comes the waiting period. So we're waiting for The Empire Strikes Back to come.
Yeah.
And then whatever movie it was that we went to go see, it was probably something we actually cared to go see, but to finally go see the trailer for The Empire Strikes Back, a friend of Steve, had seen it and told us, well, you know, when you go see this movie, you'll get the trailer.
Yeah.
Or you'll get the previews, as we called them back then. And he described these dog, big robotic dog-looking things, and we couldn't wait to see what little hints we were going to be treated to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, of course, you know, you're about a couple of years older, and you've had time to amass a pretty good, if you're me, a pretty good collection of action figures.
Mm-hmm.
You've had your early bird sets. You've had your Sears Cantina. You've decided that Blue Snaggletooth doesn't get to go in the swimming pool anymore. Because that's just not a good idea.
Yeah, yeah.
Speaking of, what a different time it was back then. We would buy the toys and open them.
Yeah, imagine that. And so, open them, just like tear them open. You didn't even think about keeping the packaging. I didn't think about keeping any sort of action figure packaging back then. I would keep one. I remember Vic and I would keep one card. It didn't matter who it was because we wanted to keep the checklist on the back of the images.
Oh, that's right. Yes. One needed the checklist.
Yeah. Yeah. So we did do that, but you didn't think about keeping the packaging until the G.I. Joes came out because they had the file cards on the back.
Ah, yes.
And you had a reason to keep them at that point. But,
or at least, you know, cut out the, I'm on the dotted line for your, put a, your cards in a little index box or something.
Which I did.
There you go.
I wonder, you know, Steve McCauley, he's got such a good memory. I wonder if you were to ask him what movie Empire Strikes Back played before. With the
Because I mean, the thing about it is, like, he and I have talked, and I think we collectively mistook what turned out to be, because of the year it came out, the trailer for Jedi. But yeah, it was an interesting question there. Is, you know, what do you do with, when was that? Exactly.
For the longest time, y'all thought it was something
Wicked. Which was that? Yeah, something Wicked. That's what it comes, but that would be another 3 years before that even hit.
Yeah, yeah.
And the subsequent attached trailer.
And I've looked up movies that came out before Empire that year, and I was trying, and I think I remember off mic, I was trying to shoot some of the movies to you, and you're like, I don't think it was that. I don't think it was that. But.
Yeah, it was apparently nothing that made as big an impression, and that's why I can't help but wonder if it was something we would have gone to see anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
And there are so darn many movies that would have come out prior to that summer, mm-hmm. or at the early part of that summer, or even...
Yeah.
Because, you know, nowadays you go to the movie theater and you'll see a trailer for something 7 months before it comes out.
Yeah.
Back then, they liked to hit a lot closer to the mark. They weren't counting on you remembering...
Exactly.
To go see this movie.
Which is weird because...
Half a year later.
Almost today, the way we work things, society as a whole, I think, has a shorter attention span nowadays than it did back in the day. Because back in the day, you could probably see a trailer for something like Star Wars and all, and it would make such an impression that you would remember it 7 months later.
Yeah.
And I think that was proven very well when they did the Batman trailer for, because when Tim Burton released that initial one, again, it compared to trailers nowadays, like if you were to compare that to like the Dark Knight or the Dark Knight Rises trailer, it's silly. But the Tim Burton Batman trailer was nothing but a collection of shots from the movie. No overlaid music, no nothing, just shots from the movie.
Yeah.
And it made such a big impact. You're like, I have to wait how long this comes out?
Oh, exactly. It was and I guess the logic nowadays is there's plenty of time to bombard you with all kinds of viral advertising and other ways to remind you.
Exactly.
Where we're headed after that, but yeah, sometimes it's annoying to me when I'll get excited about something, then by the time I've forgotten about it for a while, then I'm like, whatever, did that come out and I missed it? And I go,
exactly.
Look, and I'm like, oh no, it's not coming out for 7 months. Who knew? So Empire hits the screen, and with it, more collectibles.
Yeah.
More reasons to get really excited about everything Star Wars.
And I've said this before, and a lot of this, you can, if you want to reference some of our other tales of the early years, definitely check out episodes 1, 2, and 3. I think episode 3 in particular, we really get heavily into some memories.
Oh, yes.
But I've said this before, but what shocked me about Empire, as a kid, I was just thinking we were going to get more Tatooine, more Yavin, more of the Death Star. You know, even though it was blown up, I was thinking we were going to get something, some sort of Imperial base of some sort, a fortress maybe. But what threw me off was that initial image that my sister showed me from her school little newsletter.
Oh, yes.
was the image of Luke on his Tauntaun, and then all of a sudden I thought, oh my gosh, they're going to be in the snow, and I'm thinking it's another planet, it's a planet of snow instead of a planet of just desert, of just sand.
Exactly.
And so that's when I realized they're going to take us into another part of the galaxy we haven't even seen yet. And so that was a big deal.
And I think with Empire, you began to realize that Lucas had such a penchant for, you know, having these themed worlds.
Yeah.
You know, it was like Russell King's Milk World.
I shouldn't be surprised that the Toyminator came up with Milk World.
Yeah. You hadn't heard about Milk World?
No, I have not heard about
it. Yeah, so it was like, nothing's free on Milk World.
Oh, yes, I have.
Except the milk.
That tagline brought it all back. I have heard of this. It's got to be the best tagline ever.
Yes, nothing's free on Milk World. Except the milk.
good old
Toyminator. But you know, I remember going to see, and the other thing that was really cool is with Empire. Almost immediately, I'm making the realization that we're beginning these movies with Star Destroyer.
Uh huh.
If you look, that theme carries through all three films.
Yeah.
The very first scene involves a Star Destroyer.
Uh-huh.
And in this case, a bunch of them, and then they're just hurtling rocket rocks.
Mm-hmm.
They're fake meteors out everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why you have to make it look like a meteor on the outside when it's going to crack open and have a probe droid inside once it hits, mm-hmm, I don't know, mm-hmm. But there you have it.
Because you're thinking the Empire is at the top of the food chain. Who are they worried? They're not being policed by anybody.
I guess the logic may have been that if it looks like an asteroid or a meteor, people will leave it alone. If they're driving, like driving through space, if you know you're tooling along and you see something that looks like, hey, you know that I could use parts of that.
Uh-huh.
You might tractor beam it off course, bring them in, dismantle it, get all the droid parts out, sell them on the black market.
Uh-huh.
And they say, oh, well, there's a rock hurtling through space that has nothing to do with me.
Avoid it.
Yeah, and apparently if you're not looking in the rearview mirror as it passes by and you notice it has a retro rocket built in, the purpose of the rock is less obvious when there's a rocket. A booster attached.
Exactly. Exactly.
Doesn't generally occur in nature. With my limited knowledge of celestial bodies, I think most of them don't have rocket ships attached.
I can guarantee you they don't. Yeah.
They don't have fuel, liquid fuel booster or solid fuel boosters on the.
I want to see someone make the fan film where they take the meteors, the Probot meteors, and I want them to show. One, since they're being shot in all different directions, one that lands in Smallville, and as Ma and Pa Kent approach it and it cracks.
Now that's a movie I want to see.
Yeah, too. The Probot comes out and just fries them like Aunt Beru and Uncle Owen.
Or maybe that's like, okay, here goes the meteor.
Uh huh.
And then all of a sudden, pulling up right next to it.
Uh-huh.
Is the Kryptonian rocket.
Oh, okay.
And the two of them crash land side by side in a cornfield. And Ma and Pa Kent come and they, you know, by chance, the meteor just happened to be closer on their approach. And it cracks open and you know, the Probot's about to fry them.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, you know, Infant Clark and his uncomfortable truck lifting nakedness comes and just dismantles the thing.
Yeah. I mean, okay. Speaking to that, once I grew up a little older and realized how Kal-El's chemistry, body chemistry works, would he have had enough time to absorb enough of the power of the yellow sun to have lifted that truck up? Did we just assume that? I mean,
that was just like about a half ton truck.
Oh, okay.
The big mother. They didn't, you know, Pa didn't go in for the Kansas edition.
He didn't go for the F-350 edition.
It wasn't
back then.
It didn't have a Hemi or anything.
Yeah.
I don't think anything. I don't know how long the Hemi's been around. Maybe nothing had a Hemi back then. I'm sure there are people like, oh yeah, well, of course, Cole, they did have those back then. I don't know.
Actually, I think I'm gonna go with I think they did have Hemis.
I think they probably had Hemis in the 50s, from what little I know. But who cares?
Yeah.
I guess he got enough sun there. It wasn't a very cloudy day.
Okay, we'll go with he had just enough to pull up feet.
And maybe he like got an extra dose coming through the atmosphere.
Maybe so. I'm sure as smart as Jor-El was, he would have made that
unfiltered
thing.
As he was passing exactly. into our solar system. So
I'm sure he would have made it.
He was supercharged, and he gets to Earth, and he's like, you know, I was probably stronger as a toddler in that moment than he was when he was kicking footballs into the next county.
Okay.
There you go. So there's another. We're going to be all over the map on this, obviously. But this way, you're not going to be subjected to too many repeat stories.
Exactly.
Lord knows we haven't talked about infant Kal-El's penis before on this show. That'll be a Rancor pit first, right there. But you know,
that's our new hashtag. Hashtag Kal-El's penis.
That's right. So I think as we. I may have mentioned somewhere recently about, you know, between Star Wars or between New Hope and Empire, yeah. having people thinking Splinter of the Mind's Eye was the sequel. And I was like, no, because Han and Chewie aren't in it. You can't have a sequel to Star Wars without Han and Chewie. Come on.
Yeah.
It's just not going to happen. Do us a favor. And, of course, you know, for my part, I was probably basing that largely on the fact that there were a lot of comic books under your belt by then. Mm-hmm. And so it was patently obvious, you know, Han and Chewie are a big part of this. They have to be. Mm-hmm. And I remember going to see that, you know, as the meteor lands and you've got Luke on the very next scene, or as the meteors are fired off, the next scene you get is that great aerial shot of Luke on the Tauntaun.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember being completely blown away by that. I guess part of it was just sort of invoking memories of Sinbad and Jason the mm-hmm. Argonauts and things like that where you had the puppet animation going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you get this really, and of course I'm always silly for the critters as well. It's like, all right, something like the Dewback and the Bantha. We got something
else. See, and I know as a kid you probably went crazy over the Dewback because you were just as much a big dinosaur freak as
I was at that age. Especially like the Dewback figure was just...
Yes, yes.
I remember like taking the saddle off mine one time. I was hanging out and I realized, you know, you could kind of cover up the saddle hole with your hand.
Yeah.
And just sort of surreptitiously manipulate the tail with the other finger and make it look like it was, like, I remember sitting in the big picture window at my dad's clinic, and passersby were going down to the VFW hall there to play bingo.
Uh-huh.
And I remember just sort of like, as they were, I was sort of like, you know, I'm looking at something else, not what's going on over here, and very kind of very slowly I would be sort of tracking their movements with the Dewback's head. And people were like really freaking out, wondering if I had like a real lizard there. It apparently didn't blink, didn't really have very glassy eyes, and never moved its mouth.
Because it is a vet, so you never
know. Yeah, you could. That's true. I mean, had it been a dry cleaners, it would have seemed a little more unusual. But but yeah, so with the Dewback, and it's like, okay, can't wait for that one.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't think that I ever would have anticipated, even with the big-ass Millennium Falcon, which later became, that's not such a big-ass Millennium Falcon after all.
Yeah.
Many, many years later. I never would have really anticipated them doing a toy the AT-AT. It just seemed patently too large a thing until they did. And, of course, I had to buy one.
Yeah. And that was a big deal too. And that's the thing about the toys back then. I didn't own any of the larger toys, the vehicles, but I remember that was what was so appealing about them is because with the Millennium Falcon, you can only imagine you had all this toy to play with. You had sections in the Millennium Falcon so that you can have your figures in this section, or you can have them in the cockpit, or you can have them in the coming down the ramp or in the cargo hold. You know, with the AT-AT. you were imagining, man, you could put your fingers in the head, you can open up the body, you can
exactly
have all this room inside the body to put your
and the Annette toy, what was so cool about it, it was the first one where they really added something amazing, and
yeah,
that was a motorized guns in the chin.
That's right!
The back board, the out of sync, yeah, so, you know, one would be out while the other was in, and that was a neat, you know, it's technically a fairly simple sliding mechanism, but
yeah,
it was just so cool to have that. I mean, they could have just had them both go in and out at the same time, but they went to the trouble to engineer a little something extra.
Well, it was reminiscent of the Millennium Falcon guns, how they
yes
would go back and forth in the movie, so it's like they were trying to bring that familiarity. And that's what was cool about the X-Wing. I did have the X-Wing early on, and that's what I thought was kind of like a, to me in my mind, was a little bit of a bonus. Was like you got the X-Wing, but it had the little R2-D2 head that doubled as the button to open
yes
up the wings. And in my mind, as a kid, that was cool that you didn't have to worry about having the R2-D2 figure already because it came with the R2-D2 built in.
You know, so oddly enough, I had the opposite effect because I thought that sucks that you can't put R2 in or take him out. But
yeah.
But at the same time, you know, the fact that you had the mechanism
uh-huh
to open those wings and lock them in place,
disguised as the R2.
Yeah, it was amazing for its day. You know, somebody uh-huh put some effort into these things early on.
Yeah.
And they were relatively large, but because they recognized that Kenner early on, if they made the figure small, they could do all the vehicles, and they could do play sets, and they could have all this value added.
And that's another thing we haven't talked about in previous episodes, is the fact that Kenner gave us these well-made plastic play sets, whereas previously years before with the Mego figures, Mego playsets were cardboard covered in this cheap plastic, like the kind of plastic
They were kind of like a laminate of some kind. Or
yeah, it was almost like the plastic that your grandparents would use to cover their furniture, but but it was even thinner than that, you know.
Yeah, and it was just sort of heat sealed inside a plastic sheath.
Yeah, just cheap cardboard,
and
so it wasn't
would
much
just sort
to
of
it
fold over onto itself, and you occasionally would have like the odd plastic piece, like the transporter chamber in the Star Trek bridge set.
It's almost like
you
had to include some plastic in it to keep it upright, almost.
Yeah,
but for the majority of it, it was just cardboard, mm-hmm, and so with Kenner was giving us all this really well molded plastic. And
oddly enough, sometimes it was the opposite, where it was like mostly plastic and then some cardboard.
That's true, because you had the land
mostly cardboard and some plastic.
Yeah. I mean, there's the exceptions, like with the Tatooine Jawa Sandcrawler set, where it was a plastic base with a cardboard back,
yeah,
which later became a Hoth set. But generally, you had all this stuff that was durable, that would last. You wouldn't have to worry about if you left your land speeder out in the rain, you know, it would be fine.
Yeah, apart from the stickers, you were
in great shape. Yeah. But if you left your Mego stuff out there,
yeah,
good luck with that.
Especially if you had the lizard and the tail, you know, the stuffed toy tail got saturated.
Oh, yeah.
You might be in some serious trouble at that point. So, yeah, you know, come Empire, things are chugging along. You've got some more movie under your belt, as it were. You've got some more Star Wars mythos have been built up. And then you're left hanging. Because, you know, Star Wars could have just been what it was, and that would be it.
Yeah.
But Empire is like, okay, now you gotta wait 3 years mm-hmm to find out what happens next.
Yeah.
You're killing me here, George.
Yeah, because it was a cliffhanger. Yeah. It wasn't just like, oh, we got our medals, we beat the bad guys, now you wait 3 years for Empire. No, Empire's like, no, we're going to leave you wondering if they're even going to make it out of this alive, you know, if Han is going to live, you know, what's going to happen with, you know, the Scooby Gang back in the Rebel base, you know, or whether, you know. You had all these questions about what, and you got hit by a ton of bricks, you know, with the whole I am your father thing, and you're thinking, okay, wait, I'm not sure how I feel about that, because Darth Vader is bad.
Yeah.
But he's Luke's father. But we love Luke. So exactly. Where does that leave all of us? Where are we?
And then I'm spending 3 years just calling this a ploy.
Yeah, I remember you saying
because
that.
Because to me,
yeah.
It was a ploy. I mean, that couldn't be more patently ridiculous. What a stupid thing to buy into.
Well, we were, again, at the time, pop culture was kind of training us to expect something like that because, you know, for instance, on Dallas, you know, Bobby Ewing got shot and killed. And we go through a whole season where he's dead, and then the cliffhanger of that season, he's in the shower, and Victoria Principal's like, "What? You're supposed to be dead." And you find out that whole previous season.
Yeah, and he's
was
like, "What
dream.
The hell is the Family Guy?"
Yeah. You're thinking that whole season was a
there's going to be a handful of people who get that joke.
And so we're already been told, like, the whole season was a dream. So, and you're already trained to, like, this can't be real. It's going to be a dream. It's going to be something different. It's going to be, yeah, it's a ploy. Turns out it wasn't a ploy.
Yeah. And the thing about it is, you know, we would find out many, many, many years later that Lucas himself didn't really know what the answer there was.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's easy to imagine that he had everything all plotted out and everything was a done deal long before he went into production. And the reality is very often... the ultimate decision hadn't been made as to what that all meant. And, you know, a lot of aspects, like Vader being Luke's father, came apparently from fandom.
Mm.
Not from some preconceived notion of where this was all headed.
It was obvious he didn't know Luke and Leia were brother and sister when he did Empire.
Yeah, then that's where you wind up with the pitfalls, is the fact that, no, in fact, it wasn't all that well planned out ahead of time. Really don't have it.
But and that's what's so cool about these the three movies is, like, even though he was in to kind of quote Indiana Jones, he was making it up as he went along. You know, he by the end of Jedi he was able to kind of piece it all together where it made sense. So even though he didn't know at the beginning that Luke and Leia were brother and sister, they were able to pull it off to where you believed. We could see that. You know, yeah. it wasn't like what? Their brother and sister, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, they made some logical sense of it, or made, you know, created some way to make that work.
Yeah, exactly.
But the and it's funny you know mentioned Indiana Jones. That's another good thing to bring up, is the fact that you get Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Mm-hmm.
As sort of a...
Oh, as a filler between Empire and Jedi.
Exactly. Yeah. You get something. You know, all of a sudden you're brought into another world where you can... You've got a whole new character you can latch onto. And like, okay, it's not Star Wars, but at least it's something we can work with here while we wait.
Exactly. That's a good point. I mean, granted, it came a year later, that allowed you to, like you said, latch on to the character of Indiana Jones. It was already someone familiar with Harrison Ford,
exactly.
and George Lucas.
Well, and also, you know, they were very heavily hyping that at Lucasfilm before the fan club became a Lucasfilm fan club.
That's right.
Back when it was still a Star Wars fan club, and it seemed like, who's this interloper?
Yeah.
I joined the Star Wars fan club.
Uh-huh.
Not the Lion Tamer fan club. And
I've
probably said this somewhere before, but I don't know if I have here.
That's a good Willie Scott reference, the Lion Tamer.
Well, the funny thing is that the Willie Scott reference really struck a chord with me, because my first encounter with Indiana Jones was within the pages of the Star Wars fan club newsletter.
Yeah.
And there was the Jim Steranko artwork, the pre-production artwork, where he's got, you know, he's got a cigarette hanging out of his mouth.
Yeah, and he's got these army utility belts on, as opposed to the more clean version of stuff that he carried with him. Yeah.
So you know, who's this creep? What's this guy? And my first impression with the whip and all is, I'm like, okay, who's the Lion Tamer? And then all those years later, Willie Scott's line actually struck a tremendous chord with me. I'm like, oh my God, that's exactly, that was my first impression.
I would imagine that.
Is what are you, a lion tamer? Yeah. Oh, that is beautiful.
Thank and then you. They reference it again in Last Crusade where River Phoenix has to, you know, keep the lion at bay with the whip. So, yeah.
And that's so, fun. But I was actually sort of cajoled into going and seeing a sneak preview of you'll enjoy this of Raiders of the Lost Ark at the Wynwood Movie Theater.
Oh, nice!
That's something I knew you would get because it is a long gone Oak Cliff movie theater. That was the place to go in Oak Cliff.
That was the place.
That
to go
or the Aquarius.
There was even before there was a Redbird Mall that you had to go to Wynwood Theater, Wynwood Village.
Yeah, you either went to Wynwood or to the Aquarius. That was it. And that also reminded me of something I wanted to bring up in regards to Empire, because it was something else that you will get, is I remember going to have lunch one time at a particular Oak Cliff iconic restaurant that sadly is also long gone. It was favored heavily by my father. And that was, and I remember seeing a busboy with the Empire Strikes Back novelization in his back pocket. And that particular restaurant was none other than Naylor's.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So you may well remember Naylor's restaurant.
I don't remember Naylor's for a second. I thought you were going to say Country Burger or something like that.
I don't know if Country Burger's still there. I've eaten there.
It's not the same Country Burger.
It's not. No, it's not quite the same. But
no, it's not.
But it's still there.
It's there in name only.
Yeah.
The spirit is long dead. Naylor's not in. I wasn't aware of a Naylor's.
Naylor's was right there at Hampton in Illinois.
I'm surprised I don't remember that. Then.
And it was just kind of a little, you know, family dining type, you know, good old comfort food type of thing. But it had been there since I was a little kid. Kind of catty corner. Yeah, I think it was in that immediate area there. I may be a little off, but...
Because I know in that area you had the library, obviously. You had the 5 and 10, Amy Moses.
I think like a, what do you call it, Diamond Shamrock on the site that used to have...
Oh, okay, okay. No, I probably knew what it was, but having not...
Yeah, well, not everyone's father was obsessed with dining there every day at lunch. Or that became a running joke for Steve the summer he was working for Dad. But, you know, then you finally got the long wait for Jedi. And you get a little bit of a reprieve, like we said, with Raiders of the Lost Ark. And I remember being, you know, forced to go see this movie and then coming out of it and thinking, okay, well, we've got to go, got to get my dad to go see this because he'll love it. And that would also mean I get to go see it again.
Exactly.
So, you know, needless to say, that helped a lot. It gave fanboys something to hang their head on.
It's surprising how the image of melting Nazis could carry you 2 years, you know, that wait for 2 years until Jedi came out.
It was just enough.
Exactly.
And then, of course, comes the infamous arrival of Something Wicked This Way Comes. And the infamous going to see it, to see the trailer, and then...
Jedi trailer, not Empire.
Yeah, the Jedi trailer. In which case, you know, the Empire trailer would not nearly have been as exciting at that point, having already seen it many times. But then you add to that the fact that that was the tail end of the period where you could just sort of park your ass and wait. And but until, you know, nowadays when they go to reset the auditorium, they kick you out. But back then you could kind of hang out and just, you know, we'll be out of there in a bit. And we sat and watched the thing again and then we left. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, I kind of miss those days, but you know, I understand why.
Which, you know, since you're talking about the wait between movies, you know what always helped me with the wait between movies, and this was a big deal, was when Star Wars came to cable TV, to the movie channels.
Yes, that's one of the things I wanted to bring up as well, was the advent of home video and access post-facto.
Well, even before we had it on VHS, because back then, if you wanted to own a VHS tape, it was $80 to $120 for one movie. But when Star Wars, not Empire also, but just Star Wars hit cable TV, it was, I forgot which of the four movie channels it was on, but it literally seemed like they played Star Wars at least once or twice every day. So that's where Vic and I were like telling our friends, we've seen Star Wars 20 times. And then we'd come back to school like a few weeks later, we've seen Star Wars 30 times. You know, it's like we were literally keeping track because we could sit there and catch Star Wars maybe three times in just one weekend. And we would sit there and watch it all the way through every time it came on cable TV. You know, so that was a big deal to fill in the 3 year gap between movies.
Yeah, that's so true. And of course, you know, if you were fortunate enough to have the VHS tapes, or you could go rent them.
Yeah.
There were all kinds of opportunities. The advent of home video and home access through cable or subscription television, which in many markets was the precursor to cable.
Yeah.
You know, in the Dallas area, I've talked about how we had View, Preview, and On TV, all three long gone. There's a great documentary called Z Channel, A Wonderful Obsession, or A Beautiful Obsession, something like that, which talks about a Los Angeles area subscription television service that HBO actually started out as a subscription television service.
Okay, I'm lost.
And they gave HBO a run for its money back in those days. But that was before cable. You actually
okay,
because
I went from the UHF, you know, the 13 channels, to cable TV. So subscription TV, I've never heard of this.
Well, the reason there was a period, like in the Dallas market where we were growing up, where you had a lot fewer UHF channels. Channels, at the time, channels 21, 27, and 33 all came into existence out of the ether as carrier signals for subscription television. And there was a period where about 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock at night, those three stations would suddenly go...
It
would be like, okay, that's the end of the day for that show. The reason was that they were carriers for those three services. I couldn't tell you, it's been far too long ago, which channel had which carrier.
That's right. I forgot about that.
At a certain point, channel 21 would suddenly become On TV or whichever one it was, and your screen would just go bleh, and that would be the end of it.
I cannot tell you, I literally have, that has not entered my mind for easily has been 30 years since that has crossed my mind. I have not thought about that since you brought it up and you just started to describe. Because growing up, you had 4, 5, 8, 11, and 39. But when they
39 was like the only thing on the UHF band for many years.
Yeah. But then when they brought in 21, 27, 33, that was why I forgot that there was a certain point in the evening where they cut off because you had to
pay
for it.
Yes, they...
Good night!
And all of a sudden, we had more programming during the day. And, you know, they were... All three of these channels were desperate to fill themselves with something syndicated.
Yes,
so
yes.
All of a sudden you're getting Speed Racer and Lancelot Link and
Secret Agent Chimp.
Yeah, Lancelot Link, Secret Chimp.
Wow, I forgot about that.
I wasted my life. It was carrying on the dialogue about especially episodes 4 through 6.
Yeah.
There's a bit of a cultural history lesson that goes hand in glove with that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something you don't often get when we talk about, you know, Star Wars. Or, you know, when people talk about Star Wars, you don't get that involved sense of what it was like back then.
That's what sets us apart from the others.
That's right. So, at that point now, we begin to, you know, Jedi arrives.
Yeah.
And then we have, it's open season, because at that point, you know, I think what confused I mean, the trailer with Empire is versus trailer with Jedi situation. I think it's because Empire was the one where we got the comic book early.
Jedi
was the one where we got obsessed over the trailer.
Empire did come out early because we had the tabloid version.
Yeah, it was the big one-issue tabloid. Mm-hmm. And I remember that's the one I hid under my bed because I didn't want to actually... Like it was a porno or something. I didn't want to read it, but yet I did. And I would, you know, it just got to the point where like a week out, I finally just allowed myself one. I'm going to open one fold of pages, and that's it.
Yeah.
And of course, I opened it to freaking Yoda.
And it wasn't even the Yoda that we got.
Yes,
it
exactly.
Like,
it was like the Lucky Charms elf or Leprechaun or something. It was just tiny.
It was like a Keebler elf mixed with Golem or something.
Wow. My precious cookies. Wow, Ernie, you've let yourself go.
That's his brother Bernie.
Bernie. Oh, yeah. You got to watch out for Bernie. He lives like underneath the tree.
Set him up in it.
Yeah, with some really old Empire Strikes Back Pepperidge Farm cookies.
No.
I didn't know they made chocolate chip. No, that's just mold.
Then
come the dark times.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we spoke of like collecting the comics and collecting the toys. And, you know, toward the end, by 85, the toys are tapering off.
Yeah.
There's apparently this rumored Yak Face out there that I'm like, oh, I'm calling BS on that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't have the benefit of an internet back then. And that's another thing. We talk about, I think, that cultural aspect more often than any other.
Mm-hmm.
Is, you know, how the advent of the internet changed everything.
Yeah, because in 85, no one had the internet except for Matthew Broderick.
Right.
And if you're not sure what I'm talking
about, Lee Kokenauer.
Go see War Games, you'll know what I'm
exactly.
talking about.
Exactly. I'd piss on a spark plug if I thought it'd do any good. But, again, go see War Games.
Exactly.
So... You know, you have this period where, you know, like I said, the toys were tapering off. I started collecting Superpowers and G.I. Joe. Mm-hmm. And because I couldn't get out of being a collector. Mm-hmm. And for a while, I had a very sizable G.I. Joe collection that I completely dismissed, much to my later shame. I mean, of all things, here I'm a Star Wars collector, and I didn't think other things could hold that kind of value to people.
Mm-hmm.
But... You know, I just didn't look at it that way, and I just kind of blew out everything I had left when I was done with it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, little by little, we start to get things like the special edition. I remember being actually very excited about Expanded Universe for the first time.
Well, and to reference episode 2 when Todd Carlton was our guest, he admitted himself, as I'm sure we can all... have the same feelings. He actually got excited about the Bendham
figures.
Yeah. Because that was something that kind of sort of resembled a Star Wars figure, but that's all you had at the time was a
Bendham. And it was new.
Yeah, it was something new. So it was something you could collect
that
said Star Wars.
New.
Yeah. Well, you know, during the, like you like to call them, the dark times, that I think that's why me as a Star Wars fan, that's never gone away, because between Jedi and the Dark Horse comics coming out in the 90s, Star Wars never left my, you know, whatever, because it wasn't until after Return of the Jedi came out in the theaters and all, that's when, right about the time that we got a VCR, and I remember we went to Highland, and you remember Highland there in the Redbird Mall area? I think they sold mostly appliances.
Oh, yes. I was trying to conjure up what the name of that stupid place was.
Yeah. They had a section where you could rent videos, and we rented Star Wars, Empire, and Jedi, and that was back before they got smart, and you could actually rent the tapes and copy them. You know, you could...
Yes, you were actually able to...
If you had two VCRs, you could copy them. So we make copies of all three of the Star Wars movies and Back to the Future and a few others. So I had
or you
finally
would take them
had
off of your subscription.
Well, that's the other thing.
If you were me, back.
Well,
in those days.
And that's the thing. I did get some. So I think I actually got Star Wars off of cable TV, but they would never show Empire and Jedi, so we had to get Empire and Jedi from Highland by renting the videos. So once I had the movies on VHS, it was like a free for all. I was watching them all the time through the late 80s and early 90s, you know, and so I wore those tapes to death because I watched them so much. So to me, Star Wars was always there, even if there weren't any new movies or comics or something else coming out.
Absolutely. And in fact, you know, it occurred to me that we're, it's obvious how much we like the Star Wars because we have run very much over long just talking about the first three films.
Yeah.
And in a sense, you know, I'm not really lamenting the fact that we're going to have to kind of gloss over and revisit. And I think what we might do is for our next episode, just sort of pick up where we're leaving off.
Okay, sounds good.
But, you know, when you go forward all those many years and, you get your special edition, which we'll talk about that, you know, the excitement and curiosity surrounding that.
And the Ewok movies.
Oh, yes, I guess. Yeah. There's a lot to cover there, but once you're getting brand new Star Wars.
Yeah.
In closing, I want to talk about that, and we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit about the Ewok movies and the special edition. We'll talk about Shadows of the Empire and then move into episodes, into the rest of the episodes. And one of the things I wanted to point out, though, is, okay, episode one is finally here. And that was, you're getting into a period where it's harder to look at the at Star Wars from a cultural from the standpoint of how vastly everything has changed, because by episode one you've got the internet, by episode one you've got access to a lot more information, there's a lot of stuff going on.
You're not limited to just microfiche in the library.
Exactly. Or the school newsletter.
Yeah.
Or, you know, there's so much more available to you. So in many ways, even though there have been significant changes in those years, they seem almost the same as the present day.
Yeah.
By comparison to, say, the 70s and 80s compared to today. So I think we're going to be seeing less of a cultural dialogue and more of a specific memories, because they're certainly a lot fresher. Mm-hmm. But the reason I bring all that up is you do have the advent of the internet. And what that brings you is some amazing things like, you know, instead of having to hope you can sit through the reset of the film and watch that trailer one more time, because you swear to God you're never going to watch Something Wicked This Way Comes Again for any price. You just want to sit and watch the trailer, and then you promise you will leave. Not that anyone ever confronted us.
Mm-hmm.
But with the advent of the internet, if, like, say, you know, upcoming films like Jurassic World, if I want to see the trailer again...
Yeah.
I can go see the trailer again anytime.
Exactly.
If I wake up at 3 in the morning, like, oh my God, I got to see that trailer, I can go see it again. I don't even have to go to a movie theater to see a trailer for Age of Ultron. So, in that way, you know, the arrival of the internet changed everything. And the thing I wanted to bring up from the standpoint of episode one is, you could go and see that. That was the first time you could just, at will, on demand, I want to see the episode one trailer. I want to see the episode one trailer again and again and again and again. And, you know, at first, it took a while for the novelty of that to wear off, because it was just exciting to have that power, I think, by comparison. I'm just sort of still channeling Empire Strikes Back, or Return of the Jedi, as the case may be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But by then, you also... The downside of that is Catherine and I were still very heavily into show, selling at shows as vendors, as dealers at conventions.
Mm-hmm.
And we were set up next to this guy. There was a guy who made his fortune for a while at shows in the Dallas area by putting together, he would burn these CDs that he would sell.
Oh, yeah. I know who you're talking about. Yeah.
And, you know, to hear the guy talk, he pretty much financed his new house on this because he had the technology and the knowledge to use it to go and just burn a bunch of different things. And what he would do is, in the misbegotten idea that if it's on the internet, it's public domain.
Yes.
He would literally go around and gather together a collection of related things. So he had all these DVDs you could take home, put on your computer, and it had things like fonts in the style of like Star Trek or Star Wars or whatever the theme was. And there would be trailers, there would be fan films, there would be, you know, all the stuff you could get yourself, but it was all in one spot.
Yeah.
Easy shopping.
Yeah.
And, you know, all in one place, and you were done, and it was like, you know, $8 or $10 or whatever he was charging.
Oh, no, no, no.
If
it's the same guy we're talking about, when
yeah,
he said that at AllCon year one or year two, whatever it was, I remember seeing him out there. They were $20, $25 discs, and they weren't even DVDs, they were CD-ROMs.
That's what I meant. Yeah, they were CD-ROMs.
Yeah.
And he would burn these things ad nauseum, and he got, you know, at one point he got so diversified, there was like a, what he titled, one of my favorites was WWJW. Which is literally, what would Jesus watch?
Oh my gosh.
He was marketing even to a Christian market.
Oh, God.
Trying to capitalize on every potential market he could.
Oh my gosh. Was he really?
Oh yes, God's truth.
WWJW. It was at that point that, you know, he's selling those in the convention hall, and at that point Jesus would come in and like turn over his table because he was
yes, right. Nice. Well played. So the reason I tell this story and I tell about this guy is Catherine and I spent the entirety of one convention hearing the audio.
Oh gosh.
Of the episode one trailer.
Oh gosh.
Tens of thousands of times. Because it not only appeared on the trailer on his disc, on his Star Wars disc, as the episode one trailer.
Uh huh.
This would be the summer before that's coming out, you know.
Uh-huh.
Then it also appeared, someone had done a little fan film where they had done the South Park version. So they just basically did the entire thing just as South Park characters.
Oh, gosh.
But it was what was playing underneath that was the actual episode one trailer. So all the dialogue, all the music, all of everything that's what you're hearing the whole time. And I don't know if this is going to come through on the audio here or not, but are we both hearing the episode one trailer right now?
No. Okay, so just it's, you. It's not I'm not hearing it.
Anyways, I was hoping to capture for a moment the feel of that, but it's not going to work for me, so.
We can attach it to the end of the show if you want. I can
do
that.
Oh yeah, there we go.
So stick around for after the show. You can listen to the episode one trailer.
We'll try to cut that in. But yeah, it was just the audio over and over, because twice during the course of the demo, it would come up as the trailer,
and then
it would come up again. So you'd have the opening music.
Have
the little sounds and the. You'd hear the flyover of the droid fighters, and you'd hear some more music, and then everything would pick up at a fever pitch. And you got sound effects going on. You got a Jar Jar sounds going. You got laser blasts and rumblings and more Jar Jar sounds.
Lightsabers.
And then you start getting some Liam Neeson dialogue.
Oh, yeah.
You get the Mace Windu, and you got all these other dialogues going on, and
It's a good trailer.
Yeah, it's a good trailer, but after you've heard the entire soundtrack of it 75 times or 100 times over the weekend.
Oh yeah.
Then it was very difficult for me to research that part and and try. I actually found the South Park one.
Mm-hmm. So,
and I was trying to remember what some of the stuff was.
Yeah.
Because they replaced it with South Park characters. Like, what is Scuzzlebutt replacing? I don't remember. Oh, it was Savolbo that was laughing. Okay, that's what it was. But I had to tell that story because I promised it in the write-up for the show, and that's kind of where we'll leave things. And
okay,
we'll pick up again in 2 weeks, and in a week from now, you can find Eddie and I on the Rancor Pit Live at deepelemonair.com with their Holocron Jedi Jensen.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And you can of course find all kinds of stuff all the time on the Jedi Cult universe, jedicult.com. You can write to us at jcumail@yahoo.com. There's our Twitter feed at the Jedi Cult U.
Mm-hmm.
And we will be seeing a lot more videos on the YouTube feed very soon, on the Jedi Cult universe YouTube feed, because AllCon is coming up, all.con.net. Eddie will be there as an artist, peddling his many amazing wares.
As will Bobby Blakey. In fact, if the plan holds out, they're supposed to have Bobby and I either side by side at tables or on either side of a doorway that leads into the big convention hall or something.
And will occasional live show guest Thomas Branch be there as well, do we know?
I don't think so. Terry Parr will be there. Yeah, so Terry Parr will be there. There should be other artists, but for sure Bobby I and Terry are definitely signed up.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you can make it out to AllCon as we speak, it's going to be just over a week away. Thursday, the 12th of March, is a free day. You can come out mm-hmm. and do the entire show all day long for free mm-hmm. and see how amazing it is, see what you've been missing if you've never been. So do check that out. You can check out all kinds of conventions in the Lone Star State at Convention Awareness Project Texas at cap-tx.info. And I am fading out, so I'm going to go ahead and we're going to close this out. We're going to bid farewell. We'll be back again, like I said, in 2 weeks for Never a Dull Moment, ? Where we'll talk about the lead into episodes 1-3, everything that followed, everything that's coming up, and our building excitement for December of 2016.
And as a teaser for the next episode, we'll leave you with the episode 1 trailer audio after this episode's over.
That's right. If I can get that cut in there, if you get to the end and it's not there, it's because I didn't.
We ran out of time.
Didn't make it happen in time to get this out on the same day. So, and with that, we will be back in 2 weeks with more Simple Tricks and Nonsense.
To the prophecy of the one who will bring balance to the Force. You believe it's this boy?
He can see things before they happen.
He can help you.
The Force is unusually strong with him.
He was meant to help you.
Anakin! Tell him to take off!
Will I ever see you again?
What does your heart tell you?
Are you sure about this? Trusting our fate to a boy we hardly know?
Anakin Skywalker, meet Obi-Wan Kenobi.
I sense much fear in you.
The boy is dangerous. They all sense it. Why can't you?
Fear is the path to the dark side. Fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering.